This week's Major Spoilers podcast goes out to the following fine and faithful spoilerites: Julia Chung, Christopher Hudspeth, Marcello Pobuete Alocan. I completely mispronounced that and I apologize. Caleb Roberts, Joseph Stilwell, Thomas Duda, Darren Apple, Trevor Utvalugit, Charles Albaugh, Eric Steele, Adam Connor, George Ward, Robert Taylor, Sigbjorn Eichness, Colin Principe, Lo Joe Writer Works, Scott Santos, Andrew Fry, Jonathan Mickelberg, Jason LeClaire, Jason Fowler, not Jason, but Cheryl Annette Baker, John Luckett, Douglas Connors, Ray Arvid Gregerson, Courtney Phillips, George White, Andrea Stitch, Robert Carter, and Darius Malloy. Fine and faithful spoilerites all, and if you'd like to have your name join theirs, head on over to members.majorspoilers.com and enter the hallowed ranks of spoilerosity, so a future Major Spoilers production can go out to you.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Zach.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, our hobby is in peril. Snarkiola, the spirit of the internet, can no longer stand the terrible destruction plaguing our planet from every comment section ever written. She has given five magic rings to five special people. From Greyhawk, Rodrigo with the power of Earth. From 30th century Metropolis, Matthew with the power of fire. From the lost and found office of the Gotham City Police Department, Stephen with the power of wind. From Professor Oak's lab, Zach with the power of water. And from a voiceover booth somewhere in parts unknown, Skrull Brian has the power of heart, because, come on, what kind of power is that? By five powers combined, we summon Earth's greatest champion, Major Spoilers! The podcast is yours!
And I'll form the head.
I gave you the power of wind for a very important reason.
Welcome to issue 571 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for downloading this free show and sharing it with a friend, talking about it with a friend, doing all sorts of fun pop culture-y things with a friend.
Maybe if you don't have any friends, using it to make a friend.
Well, I was going to say maybe you and your friend could download things from Comixology, but
good luck with that.
Well,
still can.
Well, okay. So here's what happened. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how Amazon bought Comixology, and we sat around and we talked about when or if they would remove the in-app purchase for that. Right. And I thought it was going to be like 6 months from now, but I felt pretty sure it was going to happen, even though I thought it would be a bonehead move.
Sure.
And sure enough, Zach, what happened this past weekend?
This past weekend, if you logged into your Comixology app and said, hey, there's a good Superior Spider-Man sale, I'm going to catch up before Peter Parker comes back alive. Let's log in my app and buy all those issues. You agree with a nice message that said, hey, learn more about what we're doing here at Comixology. And it says, hey, go download this app and download all the books you've already bought. But just for just so you know, cannot buy any more books straight from the app. You must now go to Comixology.com, buy your comics books there, and then download them through the cloud. If you're on iOS.
Yeah, so if you're on iOS, and apparently now if you're using Google Play to pay for purchases,
they've also
removed it from Google Play.
Right.
So the only place you can do an in-app purchase is Kindle?
I don't understand how the Android, it seemed like you can still buy through the app, but you can't use Google. I don't know how Android,
right.
I don't know how their system works.
Google Play
Explain.
Is preloaded on my phone, and if you go to the Google Play, it's very similar, I think, to the Apple iStore.
Okay.
But if you go to Google Play, if you go to Comixology, it actually reroutes you to Comixology's website.
There it is. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So here's why suddenly an app that went from a 5-star rating went to a like 1.5-star on Monday morning.
Its new app went to 1.5.
New app went down to 1.5. Mm-hmm. Literally overnight, and it's probably lower than that if we go and look now. Zach, look that up.
Yeah,
while
I'll look it up.
Chat.
I'll look it up.
Here's why ultimately this is a kind of a bad move. Well, it's somewhat controversial. Here's why I think it's a bad move, because it kills the browsability feature of buying comics. You know, the local comic book shop has this figured out, Matthew. because mm-hmm. you put all your comics on display and you've got them all facing outward and you've got new this week and new last week and new the week before, and people yep. just wandering around the store go, oh, hey, I know, I like that cover. I'm going to pick it up for New Teen Titans number one. Oh, hey, that Catwoman, I think I'm going to pick that up too. And then, oh, yeah, I'll pick up some Batman stuff and some Flash, and oh, I might as well pick up these Wolverine issues as well. And before you know it, you went in to buy Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and you walk out with over $200 worth of comic book purchases. I mean, that's how it works at all local comic book shops, right?
Well, and then because, much, yeah.
And then because you guys sell sodas, you know, somebody buys a soda, they buy some miniatures for their gaming system, they buy some,
bags,
some Pokemon packs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have Pokemon packs.
Oh, okay.
Pokemon packs.
But now they've effectively removed that from Comixology. And I love doing that because I get to the end of an issue and it says, hey, you want to read the next issue? Buy it now, $2.99, download it, and away you go.
Yeah.
It's gone. And I think that's terrible.
That, to me, I think that's the worst part of this. I mean, I've read a bunch of statements from some comic book creators, and Jim Zub kind of talked about it about last year when he talked about digital comics and the sales of them. But I think removing that option of you get to end of an issue and here's a button where you can buy the next issue and read mm-hmm. it right now is mm-hmm. probably the worst part of this. And it's not even there's a button to say, let's redirect you to the Comixology store.
Right.
It's just a black screen.
Right.
And you're just done. If there's not even a redirect, if there's a redirect, maybe then you're still going to get carryover.
Now, that would be a nice thing is if you clicked on that and it opened up Safari and took to the app, because that's what Chip said. Chip Mosier. I forget what his name is. Who's the head of the PR over at Comixology. He's like, hey, just point your browser to Comixology on your Safari iOS and go to town and buy that way.
And I did. And so they tell you if you're using Safari on the iOS, you can bookmark it and actually right. download an icon to your thing.
Right.
And they made it look like the Comixology app icon. Sure. It's just colored a different. And right. It just takes you straight to that Comixology
yeah,
store.
Yeah, but it doesn't go from the app to the website.
They need to put that in there.
Rodrigo, how does this affect you?
It does affect me a little bit because I would say nowadays approximately 100% of my comic book purchases are impulse buys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It used to be that every once in a while I'd be like, oh, well, I want to keep up with this or I want to keep up with that. But nowadays I'll be usually at my local like multimedia type store and I'll be like, oh, I've heard good things about this. I'm just going to buy it. I got a little bit of extra cash. I'm going to buy this trade. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was the same thing with Comixology. Every once in a while I'd pop in and I'd be like, oh, I've heard good things about this. I'm going to buy this trade. But I am the sort of person where even a little tiny inconvenience will completely derail that.
Yes.
Or distraction for that matter. I mean, I've been at my local store and looked around and bought something else, a toy or some music or something else, because I was like, oh yeah, I've been meaning to catch up with, you know, by like the second volume of the new 52 Wonder Woman. And then I'll look across and see that like they have a new intro pack for Magic that I like, and I will just like literally just drop the comic and walk towards it.
So in other words, removing this in-app purchase is actually saving you hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
It probably will.
Also, Comixology looking out for your bottom line. Excellent.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Comixology, for looking out for my bottom line while sacrificing yours. Because, yeah, I mean, it's true. I honestly, now that like when I figured out that this was happening, I said to myself, not out of rage or anything like that, but I was like, I am probably not ever going to buy another comic on Comixology unless we are going to read something very specific that wasn't sent to us by a publisher for major spoilers. That's about the only time that I'm going to buy something from Comixology now.
I think what did Zub say about how this was a good thing?
So Zub, he's talking about digital comic sales and how it broke down. And essentially said, if you want to support the creators of books, you should go buy them through Comixology.com because that gives 30% more of the sale price back to the people. And it's not going to Apple and it's not going to Google, but it's being factored into Comixology and the publisher and the creator. So there's technically 30% more to be spread out there, and it's not going to them.
Well, and so that's actually a good thing, according to Zub. And, I, you know, if that is the case, if that means every time I go to comixology.com and make a purchase, if truly 30% more is going to Jim Zub or to Gail Simone or to Humberto Ramos, then great. I'm all for that. I'm 100% behind that. But that was before Amazon bought Comixology.
Right.
So contracts may have to be renewed. Contracts may have to be rewritten.
Yeah, I imagine that money is going to go to Amazon now.
Yes. Zub isn't the only commented about this. Jerry Conway.
Yes. Jerry made some very interesting.
You want to summarize what he was talking about, Matthew?
Well, I don't know if I can actually summarize because it's
really
been
long and rambling. Well, so one of the main thing is, go ahead.
No, basically, I think what Jerry broke down was that this is not a big finger at Apple and saying, haha, Apple, you're a terrible corporation. This is another corporation stepping in. And instead of that 30% cut going to Apple and filling their coffers, it's going to go to Amazon and fill the coffers at Amazon. So, you know, I think he was speaking partly to those people who are laughing at this being a, you know, a haha, Apple got hosed. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily that. In either case, we've limited the ways that people can access their comics.
Here's a quote from his long article. Amazon did this. It did it for one reason and one reason only, to advance their proprietary hardware platform, the Kindle, at the expense of Apple's platform, the iPad and iPhone. They have deliberately degraded the iPad and iPhone Comixology app so that users of the Kindle will have a better reading and purchasing experience. That's all this about. They've destroyed the future of digital comics to give an advantage to their hardware platform and, in passing, to leverage their control of digital comics distribution to do to comic book stores what they've already done to brick and mortar stores.
Mm-hmm. I am right now, I've gone to the Google Play Store and I have picked up the Comixology app. It does allow me on my phone to access my previously purchased material.
Right.
And it does give me a mobile version.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the same thing. So I do still have the ability through the Google Play app or the Google Play Store to download a Comixology app. Now there are separate apps for Marvel and DC.
Right. So that's what I was going to get to. But can you purchase through that Comixology app that you just had? Can you purchase a book?
Well, I don't have any money, so no.
Well, then you should be able to see something that says buy now. If it was there, you would be able to see a buy now
button. If I were to click right now, if I look right now at Popular, I could pick up Walking Dead 126. It says $2.99.
Okay.
If I click it, it says $2.99 or put it on your wish list.
Sure.
So,
all right.
You can buy.
Here's the thing.
Yes.
The DC app, the Marvel app, and the Image Comics app, which are all based on the Comixology engine, still have in-app purchases.
Right.
So if you are a true diehard or Marvel or Image fan, except for the Sex Criminals and the Satellite Sam type books, you can still buy those as a direct download through those apps. Now, a friend in Canada tweeted me the other day and said that all of the DC Entertainment apps have disappeared from the Canada iTunes store. I don't know what that means.
Interesting.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Great. I would bet that, you know, 60% of all the comics that I buy, I could buy through those three apps. And probably. It syncs, of course, up to my Comixology app and all of that stuff. But Dynamite, Boom Studios, all those independent books that people have been using through the Comixology Submit, I can't easily find those unless I go to Comixology.com.
And that's what I was most likely to impulse buy, was all of the digital-only it's like super, super small books. What I was? I loved looking through those every Wednesday, that's like not cool.
I haven't had a chance to talk to Adriana Ferguson, who's a member of Critical Hit. She's been on this show a number of times. She and her partner do a comic strip called or a comic book called Minor Acts of Heroism, and I haven't even talked to her to find out how this impacts their business. Mm-hmm. Have any of you guys talked to her about this?
I have not.
I have not. However, I am searching at this very second for Minor Acts of Heroism on the Comixology app. Oh, there they are.
Yeah, you can find them there. I mean, they've been on there for a while now.
Ooh, and it says I have a credit.
Here's the thing. Oh, yeah. Everybody got a $5 credit because of this huge thing.
Yeah.
That they're hoping that you'll go over to Comixology.com and set up. Now, I don't have anything against Comixology, right? Because I think it's a fine delivery platform for digital comics. And I'm glad that we have digital comics. And I do have over at Comixology.com, I have purchased subscriptions to books, very much like a pull list where every week it'll say, hey, your new Batman book is getting ready to download. Your new Flash book is getting ready to download. Your new Walking Dead, whatever it is. Just make sure you go into your Comixology app and download that. And that's all fine. That's all well and good. But the problem is, if I don't want to open up the Safari browser on my iPhone or my iPad, I'm not going to go to my computer to say, oh, I just heard somebody talking about this comic book. Let me look it up and do it. Mm-hmm. I've done it occasionally with the Kindle app, where I'll be listening to an interview with somebody and I'll say, oh, let me go over to Amazon really quick and buy that.
Yeah.
But I don't usually do it on my mobile device or my iPad. I usually have my laptop right there and I can go into it. So I just think that this is going to hurt digital comics more than anything. And that's what I'm sad about.
Now,
And not just digital comics, all comics.
All comics.
Because if it's true that 30% of all comic book sales, print sales, are in the digital realm, we don't know actual numbers. No one's ever released actual numbers, but I've been told it's about a third of print sales are what are buying digital. That's a third of people that's, you know, for $100,000 or 100,000 issue book, that's 30,000 people that aren't now going to find something new or find a new book to read.
What I think so one thing I would like to see is Comixology release their numbers of how many downloads were this coming Wednesday for books comparative to last week. And I would love to see those numbers. I would give Comixology $5 to release those numbers. They're not going to, because I can imagine it's going to be a significant drop on downloads between last Wednesday and this Wednesday.
Somebody this last week, and I do apologize. I don't know if either of them listened, but either Christopher Bird or Calamity John Morris said something this week that struck me as really funny about this. Talking about the limiting where you can access it, basically breaking down to what is more comics than limiting the places where you can actually go to effectively buy comics. Is this not the digital version of what's happened to the regular comic book brick and mortar industry since 1990? And I'm like, yeah, it is a good point. I mean, the industry right now is in, I would say, probably the last quarter of a big, you know, flux. There's been an increase in readership, an increase in sales, an increase in interest. And I think that's going to kind of cycle down over the next 4 or 5 years. But when you get right down to it, I think that this is exactly the same thing that comics that have driven comics to the point where 45,000 copies sold each month is a really good month.
Yeah, or let's,
to the
yeah.
point where, you know, you have to drive 60 miles to get to a place that right. sells comic books because it's no longer profitable.
Let's take them out of the comic. Let's take them out of the drugstore. Let's take them out of the grocery store. Let's take them out of the newsstand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very disappointed, you know, says this person, Snazzle Frazzle, over on the iTunes store. This app was getting that's the person's name. It gives it a 1-star. This app was getting me into comics and I was starting to find things I liked and pick up stuff I should go back to. But being unable to browse and purchase in the app basically ruins that for me. It's just a glorified reader now. Was the cost of the in-app purchases more important than the cost of hurting customers? This is going to get a 1-star because it only serves to read things I bought on the original app, which I didn't delete. There isn't even an attempt to compromise either, like being able to browse the store in-app like before, building up a shopping cart, and then checking out by being linked out of the app to a simple purchase page on the site that populates with the stuff that we put in the app. That would have been a clever solution rather than this slap in the face. So if you want mine Absolutely. And many other people's business to do something to allow easy purchasing and browsing rather than just tricking people into downgrading, I want to give you my money, but you're making it harder than it needs to be.
It's kind of, I mean, it's not exactly the same situation, but Steam, for all your video game needs on your PC video game system, has a mobile app, and I browse it on my phone all the time, especially during sales.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you buy a game, you don't even buy it in the game. You go in, I have it set up through PayPal, mm-hmm. so it kicks me to Safari,
mm-hmm.
and I pay for it there. It doesn't bother me at all.
I wonder.
So I just don't know why they can't put that in.
I wonder if they're going to make another change here in the next couple of months that will incorporate that.
And I'll be fine with that if that's the one step. If I can just group all of my comics I want to buy, and then I hit shopping cart, and it kicks me to Amazon or Comixology.com or wherever, PayPal for pay for it, Mm-hmm. I don't care. That's not going to be a problem to me.
Now, I'm still hoping that you'll be able to use your Amazon.com account so that we can link to some of these great books and give people that way to buy through the major spoiler site. But, you know, that's not, you know, that I don't think that's going to happen.
Do you think in the next year we will see another big digital comic app come up?
That's something that I've been thinking about. I was like, man, if there was a time for that little tiny competitor that's been trying to get their catch their break and compete with Comixology, now's the time to make a deal with your shiny white and or silver overlord and get a leg up on them. Because if you can launch an app that can let you make in-app purchases on an iPad, you are in.
So Comix Plus from iVerse Media is still out there. It's got a 3.5-star rating. You can do in-app purchases there. The Archie Comics app is still out there. Dark Horse app is still out there. All of those Dynamite Entertainment's apps are still all out there. And those are based on the iVerse platform.
But I don't want 8 apps.
Well, and see, that was my problem when they first started launching these digital apps before Comixology started getting every publisher under one roof. I had to have the Archie app. Or what Dark Horse was doing is you had an app when you purchased that comic or that trade.
Oh, what the heck?
And I was like, I'm not going to go to 15 different comic book stores, digital or brick and mortar, just to find my 15 different comics that I want to read this week. So the person who kind of snazzle frazzle, who says that this is really limiting his ability to purchase and get into comics, man, this sucks. Right on the weekend coming up of Free Comic Book Day, which is supposed to celebrate and promote comic books, Comixology and Amazon pulled this. It's such a disappointment. Such a disappointment.
You know, we've already in last year Image launched. You can buy all of your books from Image.com.
Yes,
they're DRM free. And I don't know how well that's been. I've never actually done it.
I haven't done it. I know a couple of people have. I think Brian Ibbett has done that a couple of times over at Coverville. He was mentioning it the other day. That's all the people that I know that have ever done that. I mean, it's a cool solution, but again, you know why I don't do that?
Because I don't want to have to just go to Image.
Because I was browsing right through the app, and I could buy it there. And instead of thinking, oh, I need to go over to the Image website. Oh, I need to go over to the Dynamite website. Mm-hmm. Oh, I need to go to all these. What about these publishers who I don't even know who publishes them? I can't go to their website and make this purchase. You know, an app like Comixology is needed to help this browsability and to help smaller titles be seen. You know, I'm still a Comixology customer.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to buy from them anymore because quite frankly, I'm running out of space for physical comic books and there's no collectability. There's nothing, you know, in new comic books that warrants having that physical presence. So I don't mind reading it digitally, but now that I have to go through that extra step, I haven't bought comic books in now a week, almost a whole week because of this. By the time people listen to this, it'll be almost a week since I've purchased stuff. So it's going to be tough to go in and make those purchases unless I'm physically in the mindset of time to buy comics.
Yeah.
On the plus side, Rodrigo.
Yes.
Zack Snyder has officially been announced as the director for the Justice League movie. So we've got that going for us.
All right.
Is that a plus?
Well, I don't know. Is it?
I mean,
do you guys have a problem with Zack Snyder as a director? I mean, he gets kind of tropey and has that signature style, fast, slow, fast, et cetera. But him being put on board to direct the Justice League movie, especially in light of the Cyborg character being cast, Wonder Woman being cast, more than likely the Flash making an appearance. You know, maybe what
Matt
we're seeing.
Damon is Aquaman.
Yeah. Damon is Aquaman.
Aquaman Damon.
More than likely, it looks like these are going to be films that are going to be shot back to back.
Yeah.
And released probably a year apart. One in 2016, one in 2017. If I were Warner Brothers, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do two movies. I'd do three movies back to back. Heck, if they want to say, well, we can do what you guys do and do better, they should do four movies back to back and have four movies ready to go over the next 4 years, one every May.
What are movies 3 and 4?
Yeah.
Doesn't
take
matter.
It
Justice
easy
League,
there.
Justice like League the... 3, Justice League 4, Justice League 2, Justice
all
League
right,
3.
All right, all right. Hold back there.
Yeah, here's the deal. The the relationship between Warner Brothers and their comic book properties has, as far as I'm concerned, always been categorized by one central emotion, hilariously signified by a really crappy CG villain in Green Lantern. They are terrified. They are terrified of actually using these properties. They know there's money to be made, but they're always really shy to pull the trigger on it. Take a great example is the Man of Steel, right? What is like the biggest, like one of the biggest things that got talked about when the Man of Steel came out? They took out the like red trunks on the costume, right? Like that right there goes to show that they are scared. It's like, if you're going to do Superman, you put his stupid red trunks on the outside of his pants because that's what Superman looks like. And then he goes around and he is Superman. Like Batman hasn't really been comic book Batman ever. The movie Batman is like another hybrid. So no, this is surprising in that they're willing to pull the trigger and like start hyping out a movie, even though they have always had such like really ridiculous trepidation to actually publish.
You know,
these,
I would agree with you for a long part, except I think they are finally feeling the pressure from investors, from fans, from other people saying, Warner Brothers, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. You've got a property that can make you billions and billions of dollars and you're farting around with it. Look what Marvel and Disney are doing. Why can't you do that? And from an investor standpoint, if people are starting to pull out of stock and they're going to the heads of the company and board meetings and saying these things, that could be enough pressure to say, look, we know that there's another studio that's got a proven property that's mm-hmm. doing the same thing. Yeah, let's go ahead and do this. So, yes, we're going to see a Justice League back-to-back movie. I think that they'll go for a three-peat, a three-movie release just to put it all together just because they can. They have to jump on this now because every genre is cyclical. Mm-hmm. And I know people don't want to see their comic book movies fade. But at some point, the sequels are going to start losing money, and then the cycle will shut down for a few years before it comes back. And if DC Warner Brothers is going to strike on this, they need to do it now, and they can't sit around, do two movies back to back, and then wait 4 years while they decide what they're going to do with Wonder Woman and Flash and all these other things. So I think that they really need to act on this. And I don't, you know, I like Zack Snyder as a director. I don't have huge problems with anything that he does. And so I think ultimately this is good news because it does say that, yes, we're committed to doing these movies.
I would agree with you, except for one thing.
The Zack Snyder part?
listening to the fans part. I don't think that Warner Brothers, DC, or any of these entities care what the fans, when we say fans have to think. Because the fans of Superman are, you know, if you figure people who buy the comic, that's 50,000 people on the outside. And people who really, really love Superman from all walks of life, okay, maybe we're talking, let's say, 1 million people. They have to sell this movie to people who do not care about Superman. You have to make this movie appeal to millions and millions and millions of people. And that is why Man of Steel is so controversial among fans of people who like a classical Superman. And I think that's why this Justice League movie is going to be the beast that it's going to be. I think that we're going to see a lot of changes made to these characters for movie consumption to make them feel more familiar. And I think that as much as people complain about the Ben Affleck as Batman, that's a smart choice.
Yeah, it is.
Because people know, they know Ben Affleck. And as much as we complain about, you know, Daredevil and how, well, he was in Daredevil, which means he should never be allowed to play another superhero again. Captain America, exactly. You can make a bad superhero movie and then turn around and make a great superhero. Mm-hmm. I don't have any fear of Zack Snyder as a director necessarily, because I don't think that directors have the auteur power that they did in the days of Francis Ford
Especially
Coppola's.
Now with the giant the corporations he's dealing with.
Yeah. I'm more worried about DC's recent remark or Warner Brothers' recent remark that they'd have to see a really good script before they'd proceed on a Wonder Woman movie, which strikes me as a very obvious statement. I mean, why would you start a movie without a very good script? But more importantly, they're still foot dragging at Warner Brothers, even with the billions of dollars circling around Marvel's movie properties. And the fact that Marvel is like, hey, look, talking raccoon. Marvel has always done that. That's kind of a Marvel staple. That's the Marvel zeitgeist.
That's what I'm getting at. I know you say that maybe not listening to the fans, but if I'm an investor of Warner Brothers and I know what their holdings are, and I know that Batman is a property and Superman's a property and Wonder Woman is a property, as a shareholder, I would be very upset saying, you are not making me money. You are not making me money because you're sitting on your thumbs, and I'm going to go buy Disney stock and Marvel Studios stock, and I'm going to sell this cheap ass Warner Brothers stock. What's Warner Brothers going for right now, Zach?
I have no idea.
We'll look it up here.
Okay.
Because you you are not making me money. You are not making me money.
And I think that's what's happening. This is,
close
Warner Brothers
today,
where
64.74.
What's Disney going for?
I don't really know.
I don't know if Marvel Studios publicly traded or
Walt
not.
Walt Disney Company. 78.64. It's up 0.86 over yesterday.
See?
As of close of business.
Well, it's up from yesterday because of another thing we'll talk about shortly.
83% positive returns on your Disney stock, according to my Wiki investor.
Go ahead, Rodrigo.
And I think this is what's happening. When it comes to superhero stuff, Warner Brothers is a kid who climbed all the way up on the trampoline and is now looking down at the pool. Mm-hmm. And you're right, the reason why the kid like pointed his finger up in the air and shouted, "I'm totally doing an awesome cannonball from here," is because I don't know who it would be in this analogy. The kid's big brother is now at the edge of the trampoline with his arms crossed, about to push him basically into the pool. They literally don't want to take this plunge. But the investors are forcing them to. And
if
I'm
you yell
afraid
it loud enough, mom will hear you from the house and come out and say, "Wait, don't do that. That's not smart."
Yeah, and I'm afraid that we are going to end up with more so-so DC property movies because the studio is still not in a mindset to do these movies. But the investors are pressuring them, and we've all seen this happen before. We've seen it happen with the Western. We've seen this happen with noir. You know, people kind of start pushing and the studio start asking for more. And you end up with movies that are so-so to crappy and don't make them any more money anyway.
Not mentioning Green Lantern by name, but...
Green Lantern's a good example. Mm-hmm. You know, Green Lantern went up against Thor. And if you had ever asked me which movie is going to do better, a Green Lantern movie or a Thor movie, I would have slapped you in the face and said, they are never going to make either. Shut up. But once they did, I don't think I would have bet on Thor. But you know what? Thor totally did. Like, Thor is definitely a better movie than Green Lantern. I don't know if it did better in the theaters.
Yeah.
But, it's just surprising. And the reason why Thor did so well and why Iron Man did so well and why the Avengers did so well is because Marvel Studios was just like, we're just going to do superhero movies. We're going to take things that work in the comics, take out the things that don't, and totally make a movie, you guys. Mm-hmm. DC Comics and Warner Brothers are still like, let's make a movie that is kind of called Superman or Batman, but it can't be a superhero movie because those are stupid.
Right. No, I mean, they've got to make a real movie that honors the characters, but they've got to make it.
But the thing that I think, and this is entirely me talking, I am not a movie critic, but I am an old opinionated bastard who knows comics. The thing that shot Green Lantern in the foot is exactly what Rodrigo is talking about. You can't half step when you're dancing the electric slide. You can't take a movie that is so full of Green Lantern history and continuity and nods to every damn thing in the world and features Kilowog and Sinestro and this 50 years of history and try to play it as a straight adventure film with a Bourne Identity central character, Green Lantern's light. You can't have both ways. If you're going to throw yourself into a movie, you kind of have to accept, you know, as with Thor, they've never come out and explained the Asgardians. They've never said, these are gods, these are not gods, these are aliens. Characters in the movie have taken the time to say, oh, these are advanced aliens from another planet. And Odin says, no, I am an ancient being with one eye from a place where I used to eat people's brains with Chianti. They didn't have that problem of being embarrassed by the same thing that they're trying to use as a selling point. And that's what sank Green Lantern.
There's also the fact that there are six different writers credited to working on the Green Lantern movie. Batman versus Superman only has two writers, Goyer and Snyder. Bad news is it's Goyer, but
news is it's Snyder.
Yeah, it is hit or miss, I think, with Goyer stuff. But the thing that I think, and especially I don't know why Geoff Johns is not trying to exert himself stronger. There was a really good article I read it this week. I forget where it was, Bleeding Cool or somewhere. That was, what exactly is Geoff Johns' job besides writing two comics a month? And they kind of broke it down. But I think somebody at DC needs to stand up and say, quit dicking around, call up one of our really good writers who understands these characters and have them write the screenplay. I don't know why you have to keep going to the same person who is hit or miss in everything that he does and put him in charge of your billion-dollar property.
He even said, that's why I was so confused when they announced this Justice League movie, because it was only like 2 weeks ago. He came out in a statement and said that it's too early to make a cohesive DC movie universe. That anything...
Yeah, well, remember Harrison Ford has been saying for the last year and a half that he wasn't going to come back to Star Wars.
I know,
property.
But it just seemed... he said it's just been vague conversations about what's going to happen. But so I just thought it was weird.
Those are all matters of opinion. I mean, you can say that the Marvel movie universe, as I did, would never work, and yet they made it work. But I think what it breaks down to is, a few years ago, Otter Disaster and I saw an ad for a writer for the World Wrestling Federation Entertainment, whatever they were at the time. And it very clearly stated they wanted skilled, experienced writers, and knowledge of wrestling was not necessary. Warner Brothers doesn't want a quote-unquote comic book movie. Warner Brothers wants a successful movie. And I think there's a thought process that even a Geoff Johns, even a guy like Jim Lee, is a comic book guy who is locked into comic book ways and isn't going to be as successful in their big time Hollywood framistadtery, because they are going to be telling a comic book type story, whether that's, you know, true. And I don't think it is, but whether it's something they can justify or not, I think there's a fear that if you have a story written by the comic book people, that it's going to be limited to the comic book fans, the people that, you know, already
I think Gail Simone and Mark Waid could do something as good or better than what we've seen in some of these other movies.
Well, Gail Simone is a better writer than David Goyer, but Zach is a better writer than David Goyer.
Let's look at so people say, before they start saying, you pick on David Goyer all the time. Here are his credits in reverse. Starting in 2017 Justice League, Metal Gear Solid, Batman versus Superman, Constantine, the TV movie, Da Vinci's Demons, which is a TV series now into its second season,
I think.
Man of Steel, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, the video game, Dark Knight Rises, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, Flash Forward, the TV series, The Unborn, The Dark Knight, Batman Gotham Knight, the video game, Jumper, which, you know, I like that movie.
It isn't bad.
Blade the series, Batman Begins the video game, Batman Begins the screenplay, Blade Trinity, Blade 2, Freaky Lynx TV series, one episode uncredited, Blade, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. with David Hasselhoff, Dark City, which, again, not a bad movie, The Crow, City of Angels, Puppet Masters, The Substitute, Demonic Toys, Death Warrant. So I'd say he's probably got more hits than misses on that list.
Yeah, Death Warrant was awesome.
Yeah. Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. Woo-hoo.
Did he pee fire in that movie?
Yes. Yes.
Great line.
I think this announcement, regardless of how you want to read the announcement, is a good thing because it does show that Warner Brothers is finally committed to doing that Justice League movie, which means there's got to be Wonder Woman. There's got to be Flash around the corner. I'm hoping that
does it mean that?
Well, I hope that they say, okay, we're going to move in this direction. We're going to announce this back to back. And, oh, we're going to wait till 2017 before we decide if we're going to do these other two movies. They can't do that. No. Not if they're going to keep it moving. If they stall, it's going to be a big stall. And it's going to hurt them even more. So, Nerdtacular 2014 is just around the corner.
It is.
Yay.
July, Snowbird Resort.
We are
less than 1 month of hands.
Mm-hmm. What?
Maybe you mean fingers. The number of fingers on your hands away.
It is
less
than 5 months. That's what I was trying to say.
What just happened?
Can you get what I'm saying?
July 4th weekend, what better place to spend it than up in the mountains of Utah at a very nice ski resort that does some cool things for the summer. And we are all going to be there.
Woo!
Zach's going to be there.
Yeah.
Matthew's going to be there. Rodrigo is going to be there. Rob and Brian from Critical Hit are going to be there. Oh yeah,
it's very high.
It is very high, Matthew.
It is. It really is. All of us were feeling it. All of us Flatlanders were really feeling it.
Oh yeah, there's a
bear in mind. I'm older and fatter than everyone.
Well, here's the thing. If they do this pancake feed like they did last year, you have to kind of walk down this kind of steep incline down to the pancake feed. And I was like fine on the way back, and I saw some guy sitting down and was kind of out of breath as he was trying to work his way back up to the hotel. And I was like, that guy's old. That won't be me. But man, on the way back, I had to slow down because it was rough coming back up. So yeah, the altitude's going to get you. So Robin, Robin Bryant will be there.
Start taking more frequent breaks.
Adriana is going to be there from Critical Hit. And I know they haven't pulled the trigger, although I've been told we can talk about it. I am helping plan the comic book track at Nerdtacular 2014. In fact, we locked the schedule down today, and there are some things that I know I can talk about. So if you want to go and see a Major Spoilers Critical Hit panel, that's going to happen. All of us will be on the panel for that. If you want to go and see and hear Matthew and I talk about comic book collecting and comic book grading, there's a panel all about that. If you want to know about how do you fund a successful Kickstarter campaign, there's a panel about that.
Cool.
If you want to break into the comic book industry, there's a panel for that. And I just heard back from Adriana that she'll be happy to sit on that panel as well.
Yay.
So there's some big names that are going to sit on that panel in addition to Adriana, too. Some names that I'm very familiar with. No, not Mindy Kaling. No. Scott Johnson will be sitting on that panel.
Jack Kirby.
In spirit.
I hope not.
Jack Kirby in spirit, literally.
We'll leave a chair open for him.
Yes, there you go. Nerdtacular 2014. That's the place where we're all going to be. You can still buy tickets now. I've got to go book our hotels tomorrow. But nerdtacular.com is where you can find out all the information. That schedule should be dropping at any time. And man, I've seen the schedule and it looks cool. There's going to be a lot of fun. I know that there's a panel about cosplay.
Oh,
I know that there's going to be some
Zach that I call bottom bunk.
There's going to be some panels about podcasting.
Oh,
so it's going to be a pretty cool time.
Good times.
People can go check that out. Also be on the lookout in your Major Spoilers podcast network feed. Look for our review, gut reaction review of Amazing Spider-Man 2 this weekend.
Cool. I'm excited.
Zach is going. Really I am going. Rob is going.
Yes.
And providing the boy behaves himself.
Yay.
I'm going to let the boy go, and I'm going to let him share his thoughts. So be prepared in the first 30 seconds of the of the show to be totally spoiled.
I was hoping. I got here too late. I was hoping to sit him down and have a conversation. Like, listen to your boy.
We will.
You need to. You need to be good this week because we're going to watch a movie together. Yeah. You need to be good. But he was already asleep.
Well, he wasn't asleep. He was in bed.
Yeah.
He will bounce around in bed until about 10 o'clock. Also, for those of you who want to be to get in on this this members-only site, members.majorspoilers.com, I know some of you have been wanting to join with a credit card, and we've had a real tough time getting that nailed out. I devoted a lot of time in this last 4 days on the phone with PayPal, hammering the problem out with them because there's a problem with PayPal, and we got the credit card issue resolved, which then created another problem for all of the people who normally subscribe with PayPal.
What the heck?
Had to call them back again. And here's the thing. They scratched their heads and were like, huh, that shouldn't have happened. And so they fixed it. So everything's working now over at the members site, VIP site, members.majorspoilers.com. That's where you want to go. You're going to get a bunch of behind the scenes stuff. You get bonus tracks. We'll be, again, talking about Star Wars here shortly.
Hey.
And you want to get bonus tracks of Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. I'm sure we're going to do Return of the Jedi here pretty soon.
You get
bonus tracks for that. All that stuff. So thankful for everyone who's already signed up. The more people that sign up, the more we can do. All for you. Members.majorspoilers.com. We're going to have another long show this week, I can tell. Let us quickly blow through some reviews. Out this week from Image Comics, it's The Dream Police.
They're inside of my head. The Dream Police, something, something that rhymes with head.
Written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Sid Koshin. This is a weird thing to talk about. There are Dream Police detectives, Joe Thursday and Frank Stanford. They've been partners for as long as they can remember because they can't remember how long they've been partners. But they patrol the universe of dreams, and they deal with people who pop in and out of dreams and have dreams, and they deal with these things. And it's very, on the one hand, it's very tongue-in-cheek because, you know, there's the detective. He's like, my name's Joe Thursday. And so it's very noirish in that sense. But then some of the things that they encounter are really weird. Like one of the calls that they get called out on is this guy who believes his cat is dead, and they're trying to prevent a nightmare from happening. And so they have to go, and the cat's really just this imp or something that's in the dreamscape that pretends that gets set up or hired to do this job to play the cat. And they have to convince him that he's not really dead so that the guy has a happy dream and wakes up refreshed and happy before a nightmare shows up. And the nightmare people, Matthew, you're going to love these guys. If you like the Candleheads from Critical Hit, you're going to love the Nightmares.
Like the Candleheads from Critical Hit. I hate them.
Oh, then you probably shouldn't. This might give you nightmares, Matthew. Then there's a Lucid Dreamer, and that gets really trippy in this book. This book is one trippy trip after another, but I love every moment of it because it ends in a weird cliffhanger of why can't these Dream Police detectives remember anything about their past? And it is very cool. And I like the art, and I like the story, and I love the craziness that it is, the dream world. I'm giving Dream Police number one, out this week from Image Comics, 4 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. Go pick it up. It's a lot of fun. Matthew, Hacktivist, number four. This is the final issue of Hacktivist. This is that Alyssa Milano comic book.
It is. And I remember Alyssa Milano from, you know, several thousand years ago when she was on that show, Who's the Boss? By the way, the boss was Mona. Now, I want to first off say that I have not read Hacktivist 1-3, and that is mostly because I'm so behind on my comic book reading. And also, you know, before this week, I hadn't really actually heard of Hacktivist. But, you know, it's Tuesday night. We're here. We're here to talk about comics. So Hacktivist number 4 is out from Boom Studios. And it's a very interesting story, and you can definitely see where it kind of rolled out of the events of the last few years in terms of the specifically social media and the internet being used to, at the very least, encourage populations to overthrow corrupt governments. The first character that we meet in this particular book is the one that I think of as Alyssa Milano, which I don't know if that's just me, but when you know somebody famous has written something, especially when it's an actor or an actress, you kind of look for the point of view character. And in this case, the point of view character is a female computer hacker, and she wakes up and she finds that her friend Ed is somehow on the internet. And there is a big confrontation, which seems to lead to the fact that they are trying to overthrow the government of Tunisia. And some of this is pretty fascinating stuff. There's, you know, a really lovely sequence where the recording that they've created to get people to rise up against the government becomes clear. And it's very visual, very cinematic. You see, you know, you jump from character to character. You see people taking off into the streets and all these things happening. But there's a point halfway through the issue where another hacker gets involved, and I believe he's the titular hacktivist, if you will. And it turns into a worldwide movement. It turns into this huge thing. And it kind of changes what I expected of the story. Not necessarily in a bad way, but in a less, I guess, a accessible way, a less objective way for me. There's that point in every episode of NCIS where they say, McGee, track this down, and he'll be on his computer going tickety, tickety, tickety on his little laptop. And he'll be like, oh, no, I have to hack the mainframe, doobity-doobity-doo. There is a point about halfway through this issue when the third hacktivist hacker gets involved, and it sort of feels like that. It comes to a point where they're actually, you know, trying to trick the U.S. government and all of their high security devices with two laptops, two turntables, and a microphone. And, of course, it gets very real when they call in a drone strike. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of ripped from the headlines in this, but overall, I like it. I don't necessarily... What's the word I'm looking for? You know how sometimes you'll see a movie like The Bourne Identity and you'll say, this is really good, but this is absolutely not reality? That's kind of the way I feel about Hacktivist number 4. It's an interesting story, and it seems to be saying that Mark Zuckerberg is evil, which I can totally get behind. But it's not necessarily something that I would look at as the realistic story I expected coming in, and honestly that I got for about the first 15 or 20 pages of the issue. But still above average, very well drawn. Some of the dialogue feels a little TV movie, but even that is not necessarily bad so much as it is just not as naturalistic as I would like. I would say 3.5 slices of meatloaf for Hacktivist number 4. When it comes out in a trade, I'll probably check it out and read the whole story and see, you know, if it really helps having the earlier chapters. And I know that people kind of hate it when I do things like that, but for me, comics have always been a one issue at a time thing, and I think that this issue holds up even as a single part of that story without having read the first three. So that should tell you at least a little bit about it. I liked it. I might recommend it. It's definitely cool.
Excellent. Rodrigo, you're reading another independent comic this week.
Yes, I am.
And I have no idea what it's about, except that we got an email saying, please review it.
Yes. This comic is called Red Run.
Stay out of room 237.
You know, Red Run is nerder spelled backwards.
Yeah, nerder backwards. Yeah. Yes, and that plays an integral part in this, because somebody definitely says, "I'm gonna get nerdered." No, that doesn't happen in this book. At least not in this issue. And clearly not in any issue, because
this is Torrance.
Yeah, clearly not in any issue, because this is actually a one-shot. So Red Run is written by Brandon Barrows, illustrated by Joel Cotejar, maybe? I don't know. Something like that. So this is a one-shot. It was printed by Alterna, so I don't know if that's one of the guys that you have to like order things specifically to get it, or if they're actually distributed to comic book stores. I'm not familiar with them. But Red Run is the story of a family who is down on their luck, but they move to a new city to look for new jobs, and they come across this apartment that is vacant. It seems nicer than it should be for a vacant apartment. And the superintendent is like, well, the family that was here moved out 6 months ago. I only started working here 2 months ago, so I don't know much about it. But as it turns out, this apartment has a mysterious secret. Yes. So I don't want to talk too much about the mysterious secret, because you know it's and with a lot does of horror it,
does,
stuff.
Does it involve nerder?
Yes, it does.
Does it
somebody
involve Jessica Lange as a nun?
Somebody very, very nearly gets nerdered. The art is good. The you know, the majority of it is just kind of people in plain clothes having conversations with each other. But the artist does a really good job of kind of conveying their emotions and their relationships. You know, there's a nice scene where the whole family is sitting on a couch. It's like mom and dad, and an older sister and a pretty young little brother. And they're all kind of lying down on the couch or sitting around the couch, kind of doing different things. And that's like, for a lot of comic book artists, that's like a, like an incredibly difficult thing to draw, because because like everybody's like limbs are kind of interacting with each other. You know, like the girl's head is on the dad's shoulder and his hand is on her head. And then his other hand is on the mom and the mom's holding the little kid. So, when you look at that, that's actually like a, it's kind of in the like little simple things that the art really shines. Also, you can pretty much tell who everybody is from panel to panel, which really shouldn't be something where we're like, yeah, good job. But in a lot of comics, it is. I mean, this is it's somewhat unfortunate how like a lot of comics from, you know, the art is not you have to like look at the context to tell who you're looking at, but not in this case. The art is really solid. The spooky stuff is plenty spooky, so that's cool too. Now as far as the story and as far as the ending, I think it has, like, to me it seemed to have a really blah ending for a horror comic. I was like, I have been back through a few times, like I've gone through the comic several times to see if like there's just some sort of like twist that I'm not understanding, and that's possible. It's possible that there was a twist and I just didn't get it, but it really looks like the ending is really more straightforward than you would expect out of a horror comic. And it's difficult for me to say more without giving stuff away, but I was a little disappointed by it. Or confused. I'm not entirely sure which. So, altogether, it was an enjoyable read. The scary stuff is definitely like the sort of thing that would look great on film and looks great in a comic. The panels are really well handled. You know, they kind of deliver the scary stuff appropriately. You know, sometimes you look at like the bottom of a panel and you're like, oh, I can see that's coming. But they did a really good job of pacing it, which can be a problem in a comic because you can see what's coming directly, right?
Right.
So altogether, I'm going to give this 4 slices of meatloaf. It was good. It was pretty solid all around. I don't really have any complaints. I mean, even the ending, which is kind of like it ends. Although it was a little disappointing, there's technically nothing wrong with it. Like, you're allowed to end the story that way. So it's a good effort, and it is a one shot. So if you are the sort of person like me who has trouble keeping up with comics, this is probably the comic for you.
Excellent. Thank you, Rodrigo, for checking that out.
Say what?
You don't have trouble keeping up with them. It's just that every place you try to buy them keeps closing.
Yeah, that's true too. Or stops carrying them.
You know what? I don't think we've ever reviewed on this show.
Anything what? Good?
Garfield. I don't think we've ever taken a look at Garfield.
I don't think we have. No.
So Zach,
let the most qualified among you to review Garfield.
Oh, come on! It's a cat who eats a lasagna.
Well, that's exactly what I assumed going into it.
Wait, let's just check. I'm curious to see where Zach is approaching Garfield from. Have you read the comic strip?
I have read a few of them, yes.
Okay.
Are you aware?
Oh, go ahead.
Are you aware that he was the 20th president of the United States of America?
No.
Did you know that Bill Murray did his voice in a movie and then denied that he did the role and then signed back up for Garfield 2?
Yes.
Okay.
And did you know that that's interesting? Because Lorenzo Music, who voiced Garfield in the cartoons, is also the man who voiced Bill Murray's character Peter Venkman in the real Ghostbusters.
Mind blown. Pop.
Wow. But have you ever seen the Garfield cartoon?
going to say no.
It's on the Netflix.
He's qualified.
Okay. No, no. I wasn't going to say yes or no. He's qualified. I was curious.
Never read Garfield minus Garfield.
No.
Yeah, that was the next one. Okay. All right.
So what does Garfield Pet Force 2014 special questions. Have to do with anything?
It has to do with something because I was scrolling through all of the comics and I was like, well, there's something I could probably just jump into.
There's something you don't see every day. A cat in a superhero costume.
Yeah. So yeah. I didn't even know what it meant. All I saw was Garfield's Pet Force 2014 special. I said, it looks like I won't need to know much backstory to jump into that. totally untrue. So what we have here is apparently Garfield's Pet Force is a thing where all of the characters in Garfield became superheroes.
Even Odie?
Yes. Yes. Odie is a superhero as well. And let the tropes begin. This is a giant tropity trope book of this Pet Force. There's two stories in this book. The first one is a multi-dimensional story of there are multi-dimensions they're converging and there's a virus and things are going bad and the teams are mixing up and Garfield is told this by a Galactus looking fellow who kind of acts as the watcher where he sees things but he is not allowed to interfere. He tells Garfield this is going to happen and he said, look, multiple dimensions. And you see different iterations of this Pet Force. Some of the Watchers, some of the Avengers, some are zombies, some are other genres of comics. Eventually, this one bad lady, I don't know who she is because I've never read Garfield before, she puts together a bad people team. And they...
Is that what it's called in the comic, the bad people team?
No, I gotta remember.
Because that would be actually pretty fitting for Garfield.
No, that would be a way cool name. Gosh, no, they're called the Evil Eight.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Each one of the people in there are just ripoffs of other comics. One is called Thunderdog. One is Spade, whose cape has a life of its own. There's Lethal Lizard Dragon. Just other stuff. So, it wasn't horrible, but here was my problem with it, is that I thought, hey, Garfield, that's totally an all-ages book, right?
Right.
But that wouldn't be a huge stretch to make that assumption, right?
No.
But all of the jokes in this issue is like, did you read comics in, like, the 80s? You're gonna understand all these jokes. You know who aren't people who read comics in the 80s?
And people Rodrigo and younger.
Be careful when you answer this question, Zachary.
People born in the 90s and the 2000s. If I wouldn't have been on this podcast and been forced to read all of the 80s comics that I have been, I wouldn't have
when
got
have
all
read
this.
80s
comics? Well, 80s, 70s, things with a lot of words.
I can see where words is a problem.
Yeah.
we've read plenty of 80s comics.
Yeah. See?
Second.
Go, Rodrigo.
We constantly force Zach to do things that he doesn't want to do. You guys should be conscious of that. We have a whole podcast in which all we do is force Zach to watch movies.
Which
it's not like we're tying him down like Clockwork Orange.
Well, you know, well, after sometimes. Every recording, he has to go home and take a shower.
Yeah.
I believe Pet Force actually is an ongoing cartoon series, if I'm not mistaken.
Not a horrible...
Yeah, because I know I've seen DVDs of it.
I mean, it's not a horrible concept in general. It just seems like, let's find every comic book superhero trope we can and throw them in this issue for 20 pages.
Can I ask a question, Zachary?
Yeah, sure. What's up?
Is the writer of this issue Mark Evanier?
Let me check those credits. My... thing is loading.
It is not. It's Scott Nickel, artist by Gary Baker and George Lane III.
There you go.
Garfield's Pet Force is indeed a 2009 CGI animated cartoon based on the Jim Davis comic strip Garfield.
I thought
based
for
on
a moment
the Pet Force novel series.
Nice.
Look at all those facts.
It is novels? A sequel novel series. It is a sequel to the Garfield Fun Fest from 2008. Now I'm
based on Dostoevsky's Garfield Pet Force from
Pet Force.
This
may be. Pet Force is a series of books for young readers. It's a spinoff of Garfield in which the main animal characters of the comic series are portrayed as comic book superheroes. The action takes place on planet Polyester.
Okay, just to double check, let's do a quick thing. Like the story that I read was like pretty much a one shot, wasn't tied to anything. What about Matthew and Steven? What about you, Matthew? Like how deep is the history of what you read?
Part 4 of 4, I believe it is a brand new series, never been seen before.
Steven?
Straczynski goes into the back matter at the end of the book and talks about how he's always been interested in the dream world, and though there may be allusions to his past, the artificial AI series, the two are not really connected at all. So it is a standalone first universe introduction.
So without really trying, Zach stumbled upon possibly the most storied franchise that he could have. This is a book. This is a comic that is based on a cartoon, that's based on a novel, that's based a comic strip.
Not a novel. A series of novels.
A series of novels.
Book one, The Outrageous Origin. Book 2, Pirate's Revenge. Book 3, K-Niner, Dog of Doom.
K-Niner's
book
in
4,
this.
Menace of the Mutinator. And book 5, Attack of the Lethal Lizards.
And if you look at the Garfield cartoon from the 80s, that actually comes from a series dating back to like 1977 or something. I mean,
yeah.
Zach is reading a book with a pedigree older than him.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, okay.
I really screwed up in what I was going for when I was picking my book of the week.
Yeah, exactly. It's really crazy that you were like, oh, this will be something that's like simple to jump in. You stumble across something that is like more complex than like the Kirbyverse.
You are down the rabbit hole, son.
Speaking of,
if you see
Kirby,
a cigarette smoking man who looks like Odie, just run away.
All that to say, I just had problems with the art was fine. I liked the character design. I just thought the using of the tropes was too much and not going to hit a target audience that I think would actually say, hey, look, there's that funny cat from those newspapers that my parents, for some reason, still get out their door every night. So I'm just going to give this 2 slices of meatloaf.
All right. Good job, Zach.
Thanks.
Way to take on a heavy character and topic.
Woo! That's what I was trying to do.
It was not what you expected it to be, and we all learned something in the end.
We all learned.
Dun, 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 dun.
The more you know.
Let's take a quick listen to George. George sent in a review this week of The Seventh Sword.
Hey, guys. I wanted to tell you about The Seventh Sword, which is a new comic from IDW Publishing. The Seventh Sword is a science fiction adventure, and it's solicited as being inspired by the Kurosawa film classic, The Seven Samurai. And if you're anything like me, you're wondering right now if the world needs another adaptation of The Seven Samurai. Thankfully, so far Seventh Sword does not read like a slavish rehash. It's still a familiar setup. A city in trouble looks to a troubled outsider to protect it from a marauding warlord. The Seventh Sword itself is set on a faraway, resource-depleted planet. Daniel Cray, one of the last surviving members of UN Peacekeeping Force, is the sword-slinging mercenary protagonist. The plot itself is what you'd expect, and the setting is fairly interesting, if not terribly creative. But what I liked about Seventh Sword most was artist Nelson Blake II. He gets the chance to draw some weirdly engaging bad guys, and his action is clear and fluid. Seventh Sword isn't in reinventing the wheel, and it isn't taking a particularly new tack on its old inspirations. But it's reasonably fun. So if you're looking for a decent adventure story, there are worse places to look. I give it 3 out of 5 stars. Check it out.
Thank you for that, George. Listeners, if you want to participate in the Major Spoilers podcast, there are a couple of ways you can do it. You can call our Major Spoilers hotline. Matthew, that number is
785-727-1939. The Major Spoilers, he only lets me do this every 5 episodes now. Hotline.
And we should also give at this point a shout out to our sponsors, tweakedaudio.com. You want to head over to tweakedaudio.com, buy some of their cool earbuds. A lot of colors, a lot of styles, a lot of designs. You're going to love them. I know I love them. Zach, you love them?
I do.
Rodrigo, you love them?
I do.
Matthew, your wife still loves them?
Well, you know, they were dating for a while. She's a little cool, but you know, it's all right.
Tweakedaudio.com is the place you want to go. And when you check out, use the checkout code MAJOR, M-A-J-O-R, and get 33% off the price. We thank TweakedAudio.com for their support.
Thank you, Tweaked Audio, for your support.
Another way you can reach out to us is you can email us at podcast@majorspoilers.com, or you can participate in the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week.
Poll of the Week, week.
So this week, oh, I forgot about that part.
Yeah, you always do.
I always forget the giant poll. We've actually been doing this show, what, 6 years now? Giant poll in the middle of the room. Something like
that. It seems like
we're bordering 15. On year eight.
Holy gazanga.
What movie?
I haven't done anything that more.
So this week, I already mentioned The Amazing Spider-Man 2. We're going to go see that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of not really the kickoff movie to the summer, though it might as well be. It's the first movie in May.
Yeah. May's Mark loaded. Well
May is loaded. That's what I keep telling him. May, go home. You're loaded. at the other end of the summer. Don't drink and drive, kids. Don't drink and drive.
I don't know why that was funny.
Oh, man.
So Amazing Spider-Man 2, we're going to say, kicks off the summer, even though one could argue that Captain America actually did it a little bit early.
You'd probably do that.
Way at the other end of the summer, in August, is Guardians of the Galaxy. Two Marvel movies, neither one of them... only one of them is from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Spider-Man obviously is not. And interest level for Amazing Spider-Man seems to be okay. Interest seems to be a little bit mixed for Guardians of the Galaxy. But the question this week is, what movie are you more interested in seeing? The Amazing Spider-Man 2 or Guardians of the Galaxy, Zach?
See, this is a hard question for me.
It's not which one are you going to see. It's which one are you more interested in seeing.
Which one I'm more interested in seeing. I'm very interested in seeing Spider-Man this week. I'm very
interested. Because of Emma Stone?
No, because I like Spider-Man. I wasn't completely against the first one. I kind of like the first one.
And I know because you just read that Garfield comic and this one has Garfield in it.
Absolutely. Okay. There's a connection there.
All right.
I'm interested to see what they're doing with all the heroes or all the villains and where they're kind of going, because Sony's trying to build a kind of a Marvel thing.
Right.
And they're trying to spin off Spider-Man, and I'm interested to see where that's going to happen. And I just like Spider-Man. And so I've been interested in Spider-Man for a while, and I'm very keen on that.
I don't know why IMDb has Amazing Spider-Man 4 listed as announced.
It's been announced.
And they don't have Amazing Spider-Man 3 listed as announced.
That should be.
Yeah. All right.
Come on, IMDb. Anyways, however... Guardians of the Galaxy looks fascinating. I think I'm going to laugh. I think I'm going to love every minute of Guardians of the Galaxy. Mainly because it's Marvel even going deeper and crazier into all the properties they own and saying, what else crazy can make us money? And I think they might have hit it. And I'm hoping this makes a lot of money. I'm super excited about it. I'm going Guardians of the Galaxy.
Matthew, what about you?
Well, I'm of two thought processes on this. One, I am always the guy who's like, you know, more interested in the deep cut type characters. I've been reading Guardians of the Galaxy since I was like 12 years old when I could find them. And nobody else wanted them, by the way. When you could find them in the nickel bin at Pat's Book Nook and go, oh, I'm going to get all these Guardians of the Galaxy. But when the Guardian stuff really opened up and started dealing with real cosmic Marvel whack jobbery around the turn of the century, that series got really good. Spider-Man has some good stories, but here's the kicker for me, and this is what really threw it. I don't like the fact, and... you know, forgive me, this may just be my look at it. I don't like the fact that it seems like Sony is putting out Spider-Man movies because if they don't, they're going to lose the rights to Spider-Man.
Right. That's true.
And this is the fifth Spider-Man movie since what, the year 2002, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
2001, yeah. I think the first one came out.
Five Spider-Man movies in less than 15 years, two of which are retelling the origin. And it seems like... I would rather see an untested property. I'd rather go and check out something new-ish than go and see a property that feels like it only exists because somebody really wants to make sure they keep the rights. I've seen Spider-Man movies. I saw the last Spider-Man movie, and I was kind of like, ooh, I like Emma Stone better than Kirsten Dunst. But, you know, Kirsten Dunst played a really great Gwen Stacy in her Mary Jane and vice versa when it comes to Emma. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I said Guardians of the Galaxy.
Rodrigo.
I also say Guardians of the Galaxy, actually largely for the same reason that Matthew does. With one exception, I was actually pretty cold on the Marvel space stuff. I kind of wasn't feeling it. But I'm even colder on Spider-Man, on the Amazing Spider-Man franchise. It, you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, I was a teenager to 20-ish year old when those movies were coming out, and I was really into the Sam Raimi Spider-Man stuff. And then when this, when Amazing Spider-Man came out, there was a lot of it that seemed too familiar too soon. And the things they changed weren't that great. To me, except of course for like the magnificent chemistry of like is it Martin Sheen and Sally Field?
I
wanted to see more of that movie. Like I wanted to see the romantic comedy in which Aunt May and Uncle Ben get together. Like that's what I wanted to watch when I saw that.
Called Smokey and the Bandit. You should go rent it. It's good.
Well, there you go. This is the most enthralling thing that has happened on screen so far, and then they killed one of them. So it's a spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert for a comic that came out in 1961, people.
Right. And so because of that, and because Marvel has been knocking it out of the park, Iron Man 3 didn't blow my mind, but it was clear that there was a good continuity, a good solid line. The things that were happening made sense in the crazy world that Marvel is building up. So I think that Guardians of the Galaxy, especially after seeing Thor 2, has a lot going for it. Like there's a lot of momentum there. And even if it turns out to be a so-so movie, it's going to be very enjoyable. I think Amazing Spider-Man 2 is currently fighting half of the momentum that it would have.
Taylor says, I'm looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy more only because it looks funny plus new franchise. However, the Garfield Spider-Man is amazing. Ah, I see what he did there. Can't wait to see it too. Maximus Rift says, no contest. Guardians of the Galaxy seems more interesting. Pierce says, after the first ASM, they would need to pay me to see the second. Guardians of the Galaxy looks interesting. Still, I won't see it in theaters. Rob says, going solely on the trailers, Guardians of the Galaxy looks more fun. Mela says, Guardians, give me more space raccoons and sentient trees over another angst fest any day. ASM2 is a renter for me, says Frank. Matt Goyne says, Guardians, simply from the standpoint that Marvel Studios is showing that it is able to tell a story that is fun and interesting to me. Dr. Dinosaur says, I keep hearing this, generally people seem confused about the concept of Guardians of the Galaxy. I keep hearing this on entertainment and comic book websites. Who are these people? And are they really more confused about that than Thor or the Iron Man initially? Maybe. Renee says, I voted Spider-Man. Confused. You don't think they're confused?
I don't think people are confused by the Guardians. I think they don't know who the hell the Guardians are. Yeah. And I think that that's a selling point.
Yeah.
Well, it's a new character set that they haven't seen before.
I have this theory, and I might be totally, totally wrong about it, but I have this theory that there's this kind of weird media construct of Guardians of the Galaxy will not work because people don't understand what Guardians of the Galaxy is. And it propagates itself through the internet, not because people aren't actually understanding what Guardians of the Galaxy is, but because people kind of in positions like ours doing podcasts and websites and entertainment shows like that say, so person I'm interviewing, do you think that Guardians of the Galaxy will be successful even though people don't understand what it is? Like I think that actually comes from the media. I think that
self-fulfilling.
Not we specifically, not Major Spoilers, because I don't know that we've ever said it. But I think that guys like us are actually propagating that weird Trojan in people's brains that people won't be into it because they don't understand it.
And
I think it's a harder tie for people. I think it's a harder tie for people to look at it and go, oh, this ties into that Iron Man and the Thor and other stuff. I think that's the part that's going to lose people.
They're going to get it.
Well, I don't know that that's going to lose people.
Renee says,
I think that they'll pull something.
Renee says, I voted Spider-Man only because I found Chris Pratt annoying in Parks and Rec, and he seems like he's playing the same type of character, but I've never seen him in anything else, so I might be wrong. I'll probably just wait for the Blu-ray on both. I'm also going to go with Guardians of the Galaxy. I want to see what it's about, but I'm also interested in going to see Amazing Spider-Man 2 only because I'll take my son to it. I can't wait to see what his reaction is. Here's a preview. I think he's going to say he liked it a lot.
Probably.
Yeah. Matthew, have the rest of the Major Spoilers Nation vote to date?
Interestingly, for all the worry that nobody knows what Guardians of the Galaxy is.
Well, granted, we are a comic book and pop culture website. That,
yes. 10-1 Spoiler Rights are voting. 9% saying looking forward to ASM 2. 91% saying Guardians of the Galaxy is something they're interested in. The thing about Guardians of the Galaxy is I don't recall any of these characters ever being adapted before. And I think that's your selling point right there. You're not going to have to fight with other Star-Lord, other Gamora, other Groot tales.
Yeah.
The way,
I mean,
you know,
I think in very, very recent, like Earth's Mightiest Heroes type stuff, we might have seen some of these guys, but it's like super recent. Yeah. And that's not the stuff that the majority of people are going to be looking at.
I want to say Drax was in Superhero Squad in his old cape and cowl suit, but. You know, I think that Guardians of the Galaxy, the not knowing what it is not going to bother people because generally when a movie comes out, people don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Not ever. Well, actually, in the year 2014, virtually everything we see, it does seem to tie into an existing franchise. But there was a time long ago, Zachary, when a movie would come out and you wouldn't know what it is and you'd go see it and you'd be like, what is this Wars in the Stars all about? And then it would become a thing because of its, you know, actual content rather than the buzz around it by the industry and the guys, you know, at Warner Brothers who want you to love it. So
simpler times.
Listeners, you can participate in this week's Major Spoilers poll of the week by heading over to majorspoilers.com, voting in the poll or heading over to the page and use the comment sections to share your thoughts on why you're more excited about one over the other. While you're over there, maybe you want to pick up one of those Guardians of the Galaxy trades. You know what you have to do? You click on that Amazon.com button. Click on that button. And you buy it from Amazon. It gets shipped to you in time for the movie to get here in August. And best of all, a little bit of your purchase doesn't increase the price, but a little bit comes back our way and helps support everything we do here at Major Spoilers. There you go.
By the way, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you do want to kind of start from what kicked off this whole Guardians of the Galaxy thing, you have to start with the series Annihilation, which I think is really what got all of the space heroes kind of together. The thing is, you're actually only, out of all the guys that are standing there, you're only going to see two of them in the first, like, three volumes of it.
Like Drax and...
Yeah, Drax and Gamora show up. Drax is like the first one to show up. Then Gamora eventually comes in. Like Star-Lord, Groot, and Rocket Raccoon are not in it for a long time.
They show up in the sequel, Annihilation : Conquest.
Yeah.
And then at that point, the best part is, if you're looking for comic books featuring this iteration of the Guardians of the Galaxy, they do not... to my knowledge, exist before the last volume of Guardians, which I think is up to issue 11 or 12.
Yeah. And that is why you need Guardians to go and buy Guardians of the Galaxy comics now over at Amazon so you can be totally confused and totally
the first
shoot
appearance
down our plug
of Gamora shot through the roof. We had a first appearance of Star-Lord in the store, and it's been there for 15 years. 15 years. Nobody wanted it. It had an $8 price on it. It went on the interwebs recently for a lot more than $8. I'll tell you that for free.
All right. Cool. All right, listeners. It has been a kind of a rough week for fans. First, we got the Comixology news. Then we got the Zack Snyder news. Worst of all, though. Oh, wait. Did I say that? Then the worst part, though, is Lucasfilm, a.k.a. Disney, saying that the Star Wars expanded universe is gone. No more. All those books you read as a kid, Thrawn Saga or whatever it is, Heir to the Empire, gone. No longer canon.
No!
No longer
not
canon.
What they said. Were they ever?
Well, I teach a Star Wars class, Matthew, at the university.
I know. You keep trying to throw it in my face.
And we did have a long discussion on what is canon. So what essentially Lucasfilm is saying at this point, Leland Chee has been joined. He used to be the only person in charge of the Holocron Cube at Lucasfilm. And he's been, a lot of other people were put on the staff to help him sort out continuity and whatever. And what they've decided is that all the other continuities, the incontinuity, the, I forget all the different continuities. There's a T continuity. The only one that matters is G continuity. Anything George Lucas has worked on is in continuity. So that means all the Star Wars films, the Attack of the Clones and Star Wars Rebels shows are in continuity, as well
didn't he write the holiday special?
As well as, well, even he says that one's not in continuity. So whatever George says is the case. But it also includes any book that had a direct tie to the movies. Okay, not something that takes place 25 years after Return of the Jedi or anything like that, but anything that had a direct tie into events in the movies.
Basically, all the books that happen in between the movies, like Shadows of the Empire.
Yes, might be counted, especially when they have an impact in the movies themselves. And of course, Lucasfilm is saying, hey, if anybody working on, you know, expanded universe stuff from here on forward wants to use things from the old EU, they can, but we're just going to have to decide whether that is going to be proper canon from now on or not. And of course, that got everybody's mind blown. Probably some people for a good way, some people a bad way. Some people probably scratch their head saying, what's an EU? Are those one of those giant birds from Australia?
It's pronounced yes. EU.
Well, I'm now, in case somebody else hasn't already done it, small N, capital E, capital U. For the new expanded universe.
Oh, man. Should have spelled like N-E-U.
Nice.
N-E-U.
No.
Small N, big E, no. Small U.
Oh, yeah. No, I was thinking N-E-U, E-U.
Oh, no.
Like, or just N-U.
That's worse,
better,
Zach.
Yeah.
So all the other expanded universe stuff, now gets put under a new banner called the Legends banner. Kind of like an Elseworlds banner, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Star Wars Rebels, they're going to start using some of the stuff from the past. And to rub the salt into the wound, Lucasfilm says, oh, there is no more EU, but we are now introducing new books in the new EU. And so they announced three books. Tarkin is one of them.
New EU, EU.
Yeah,
Jungle,
see how
of
works? Ow! Ice.
So what do we have? We've got A New Dawn. That's a new book that's coming out. That's tied into Star Wars Rebels. Then there's Star Wars Heir to the Jedi. That looks like it ties into Return of the Jedi since it has Luke Skywalker on the cover. And then you have Lords of the Sith, which is a Darth Vader tale. And then you have Tarkin, which is about Tarkin as a young man. So those are the books that they've announced as part of the new expanded universe. Does expanded universe matter? Let me ask you guys that.
Can I go first? Matters. Oh, no, you go first.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Does the expanded universe matter? Yes and no.
Rodrigo, what do you got?
are you okay? Are you done, Matthew?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. So, does the expanded universe matter? Of course it does. It matters because anybody at all is into it, right? So everybody has valid opinions. Some people think that the definitive Battlestar Galactica is Galactica 1980. A lot of people would disagree with them, but it's valid. It's valid to like whatever. I'm sure we all have terrible things that most people think are terrible that we're actually into, and that has to be valid. You know, just because most people like something shouldn't necessarily mean that it's good or bad or valid or invalid or whatever. So it does matter in that sense. What Lucasfilm or whatever it's called nowadays,
Lucasfilm.
What Lucasfilm is doing here is making room for themselves to create new movies. There was a time when there was a super duper dictator for life that oversaw this stuff. And he decided to let people do this or that or not let people do this or that until he decided that he wanted to get it back into the game and change things. And when the prequels came about, they changed certain things about the expanded universe.
Right.
They invalidated certain things. Nobody had ever talked about Qui-Gon Jinn before. You know, he's not a character that existed before. Even though we had documented every last second for the past 3,000 years of anything a Jedi ever did, both in comic book form, in audio play form, in novel form. So what they're doing now is they're just clearing things out, and they're getting all the anger out now before the movies come out. Mm-hmm. This way, people have a chance to sit there and pout and stew, and then when the movies come out, they'll be ready for it. If they had waited until the movies came out and negated the canon and not told anyone about it, they would have a poopy storm in their hands.
And I think one of the reasons behind, especially everything that happened after Return of the Jedi, why removing that is because it limited the stories that they wanted to tell in the movies. Mm-hmm. Because if you follow along the Expanded Universe book, there's this whole thing with Han and Leia and the children of the Skywalkers and the rebuilding of the Jedis. And that may not be what we're getting in episode 7. And you're right. If the two don't align right, people are going to have a fit.
Yeah.
And it's not going, it's going to cause that universe to kind of fall to the wayside.
I mean, J.J. Abrams kind of did that when he made Star Trek.
Yes. And that some people have said that this is the J.J. Abrams screwing everything up for everybody.
But in Star Trek, you had the ability to go through a wormhole and go to a different universe. Star Wars doesn't really do that. So, and I think, never thought about Rodrigo's point, and it's absolutely right. They needed to do this early because doing it right before the movie or just letting it unfold in the movie would have not been pleasant.
I think an expanded universe is a really great thing. Mm-hmm. I've only probably ever read only one expanded universe novel. Of course, the Star Wars comic books from Dark Horse we've read before, but I've not really gotten into the whole expanded universe in great detail, and it does not affect my enjoyment of the movies. And if they're there and I've read about them and I've enjoyed them and they're now taken away, it still doesn't lessen the impact of all those comic books and the one novel that I've read. Likewise, everyone who's read every single one of those books, and I know there's a couple of kids in my Star Wars class that know every single detail about the Star Wars universe. But it's not going to negate their enjoyment of those books. I'm sitting right here, sent to me this week. I'm really excited about reading. I kind of started reading it last week. William Shakespeare's Star Wars and William Shakespeare's The Empire Striketh Back.
What the crap?
By Ian Dorsher. And it is Star Wars told in iambic pentameter as if the bard had written them himself.
Wow.
They're really great. But you know what? They have nothing to do with the Star Wars universe. But they're still enjoyable as they sit here. So I'm really kind of interested in seeing what happens through these pieces. It's pretty trippy when
you know why you're taking it the way that you are, though, right, Steven?
Because I'm not as invested as super fans are.
Only partially. I think you are invested, and you would potentially, if you enjoyed that book, you could be invested. But the thing is, you have a big callus or antibodies or some other similar metaphor in that. Kind of, in that you are a comic fan.
Right.
How many times has your favorite character been rebooted?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look,
the answer
Legion
is a trillion.
Look, that's why I said small n, capital E, capital U for the new DCU. Because DC Universe got rebooted and we had to live with that. And Marvel gets rebooted all the time and we have to live with that.
Marvel's in a constant state of reboot.
Yeah. So yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe I have built up that callus of been there, done that.
There's also a factor to take into account. With Steven, newer is always better.
No, not necessarily. I don't like change as much as the next person. But I think if there's a benefit to something, that's a good thing. I'm not, except for the explanation of the expanded universe hurts our ability to tell movies and potentially spoils things that would have to happen in those movies. If we were to say everything in the universe, that's the only valid argument I can see for doing away with the expanded universe as it sits right now.
I can think of another one.
I think it's a little bit unfair to say that with Steven Neuer is always better. Steven is very much a technology early adopter. But that doesn't necessarily translate into his tastes. I think that especially things that he's interested in, like very interested in, like any given Batman storyline, I think that Steven can have very strong opinions and has
Said them expressed on the podcast. Them before. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That, you know, just because somebody new is writing Batman doesn't mean he's going to like it.
Right. The main thing that we're looking at here is it is really easy to blow this off and say this doesn't matter, to say this is not important. You know, Star Wars fans are being too sensitive, or they're overreacting, or they don't know what's going on. But
that's passion,
these
man.
Stories matter to people, and they matter a lot. And most importantly, as a fan of the Legion of Superheroes for the last 35 years, I can tell you these moments do sting on an emotional level. They do hurt when these things happen. But most importantly, you know, I've recently been rereading Legion Volume 4. And it's, you know, it's one of those experiences where I'm like, oh, I didn't remember this part that sucked. But those stories still exist for me. They're still out there. I can still enjoy them. I can still love them. People caring about a, you know, caring about a property like this is very important. And I think that Lucas Disney Film, Phil's or Verna, whoever made this announcement, did the right thing. Because when something like this happens, you got to pull that Band-Aid quick. People are now upset, and they're going to be upset. But when this movie comes around, you're going to have a portion of the population who are like, I'm never going to watch this because it invalidated my favorite story. That's fine. That's legit. Those people know going in, but there are other people who are like, even though, you know, they invalidated, I don't know, Shadows of the Empire or, you know, Vector Prime where Chewbacca dies, they're going to go in and say, I want to see what this. Yeah. So for 1999, listen, my spoiler limit is 1 week for comics, one, you know, actual season for television shows and stuff. And for Star Wars, I'll spoiler it 5 minutes after it comes out. Because Star Wars people, you know, they beat me up when I was a child. That's where I was on the nerd level. But most importantly, if this is really something that breaks your heart and you will never, ever want Star Wars again, that is perfectly valid. Now, do I think you're overreacting? Maybe. But it's not my point to tell you. However, I will say this. If that is true, find something else to do. Find something else you love. Go out. Fill that void with something wonderful. Don't go to the internet and tell everybody how terrible something is going to be. And more importantly, if you know that that's not true, don't spend the next year and a half telling us that on every single quote board, that you're never going to watch Star Wars again, ever, ever, ever. And then when Episode 7 comes out, tell me how they changed your mind. Well, I'm not saying that happened with the Star Trek reboot, but it happened with the Star Trek.
Well, so here's an interesting thing is that one of the things that makes Star Wars so fascinating is this idea of participatory culture that comes out of Star Wars in the fact that, yes, we're giving these other authors who are not George Lucas the chance to tell these books and stories, these comic book creators to participate in the Star Wars universe and tell stories that enthrall people. And the fact that Lucasfilm said, you want to make fan films? By all means, make fan films, because it's adding to this expanded universe and it's making it more popular, more immersive for people who really want to get into it. And it tells interesting stories set against this backdrop of Battle Amongst the Stars, not the title of the movie. And I think that saying that a lot of the expanded universe is now invalidated really hurts this idea of participatory culture. And I'm going to tell you right now, in the next 6 months, Disney's going to put a crackdown on all the fan films.
That's an interesting theory. You're very frequently right, Steve, and I'm concerned that you might also be right at this point.
Well, and that's the sad thing. So again, I teach a Star Wars class. I'm missing class tomorrow night because we're doing something else, but I want to be involved in the students' discussion about the Star Wars news that's come out in the last week, because I know some of the students in there are just, their world is going to shatter into the ground.
Yeah.
But I know some of the other ones in there are just going to be like, I don't understand what the big deal is. Mm-hmm. But I recorded a lecture about fan films and participatory culture when I was going to Planet Comic-Con a month or so ago. It's online. if you've signed up to the Major Spoilers email list, you got access to that. Or if you know where to find it, I'm sure you can find the lecture. It's public. But if you signed up to the email list, and you can do that over at majorspoilers.com, I spend 45 minutes talking about the importance of participatory culture and why expanded universe stuff like this really does matter and why it is important. And I'm afraid what's happened is we've reduced audience involvement in the Star Wars universe by this decision. And if this is what Disney is doing with the expanded universe, yeah, in the next 6 months, I was really surprised that they haven't put a halt already to this fan film that's being done in France for something like $100,000 or more to put it together. It's this 2-hour long movie that they're putting together, and they want to have it done in time for episode 7 to be released. Uh-huh. I'm just waiting for Disney to say, oh, no, you're not. And I'm waiting for them to go onto YouTube and say, YouTube, anything that has Star Wars stuff in it, you take it down because it's a violation of our copyright. And I really think that after this move, it will not surprise me that if in the next 6 months, prior to the release of episode 7, if we see the fan films taken down, or if we see cease and desist letters being sent out, and that is going to be a real shame.
Here's something to think about. When I was in college, I started reading a magazine called Doctor Who Weekly, which then evolved into Doctor Who Monthly. When I was in college, Doctor Who had just been canceled in 1989. This magazine continued being published every single month, and it got to a point where we were analyzing the old stories, talking about the stories, people were making their fan films, people were writing, you know, their expanded continuities. There were things that were in continuity for the BBC, but the BBC's line on continuity was always, what continuity? And people spent years and years really delving into the existing, you know, 7 doctors and then 8 doctors. And eventually, around the year 2003, it stopped being fun for me anymore because they started a new Doctor Who series. And in 2005, when that came out, there was a lot of, you know, weird stuff going on where people were like, this will never be the same. Now they're doing new stuff and it will never be the same. 5 years, 6 years down the line, the new Doctor Who is amazing. The new Doctor Who has made some incredible stories, and there are stories of greater quality than 80% of the old series, original series Doctor Who that exist. But in 2004, 2005, I was very concerned, and you couldn't find a fan who wasn't concerned about what was going to happen because we didn't know. We didn't have any idea. We just knew things were changing. And we got to a point where everybody kind of closed ranks and went, well, we're still going to stick our fingers in our ears and do what we've been doing. Mm-hmm. And then the Ninth Doctor showed up. So it's not as though this is an entirely new thing, I think, for the generality of fandom, you know, the capital F, hundreds of thousands of people. But I think it's something where previously we've seen lots of little bits and pieces of Star Wars continuity go by the wayside. We've seen things that started as non-canon become canon. Like Coruscant, Planet Coruscant was actually only named in Star Wars movies in episode, was it? It's either 1 or 2, you know, 30 years into the thing. Somebody had come up with the name Coruscant in a book. Mm-hmm. And the Galactic Empire had their central planet of Coruscant, la-di-doo-da. And eventually they put that in a movie. Sure. And it became solid. But Coruscant, as it exists in the movies, is not consistent with the Coruscant that we saw in that C canon, whatever you want to say it was, the S canon or C canon or, well, you know.
Yeah, G canon.
The new Dodge F canon.
Yeah, the G canon is the only thing that matters now, according to Lucasfilm.
Well, stop saying matters.
Well, according to
the G canon is the only thing that's going to be officially realistically in the films, the, you know,
right,
when
recognized.
You say matters, that's what's hurting people's feelings is they're telling, you know, they're saying these don't matter anymore.
Well, yeah, but it's difficult to say these don't matter anymore, which is also what they mean, without saying these right. don't matter anymore.
Exactly.
Cause that's the thing. They're trying to create this space for themselves and potentially, I guess it's easier for them to just field the death threats for getting rid of a particular thing rather than having to answer the questions of, wait, so in the Thrawn trilogy, nope, not canon anymore, guys. No, but wait, listen. Okay, so the Thrawn trilogy,
See, and it's a question for fans is, would it be preferable to have an entirely closed system and a stagnant loop of no more new Star Wars movies, but you can expand in the forward, the future, the past. You can write what happened in the 15 minutes before C-3PO found R2-D2 on the Jawa shuttle, whatever that's all. Or would you rather have new official continuity, big screen movies that you can go and see? Both answers are legitimate. Both answers are correct to the people that have them. But I think that right now we've got people who are operating out of, you know, fury and anger and shock more than thinking this, what's coming up, what's going to happen in the future. Nothing is set in stone anymore.
Let's look at a little positive stuff that comes out of the Star Wars news this week. Hey, the cast has been announced.
Hey, I wonder if they planned that to make the bad come before all the good they're about ready to dump on us.
I'm sure that it was all planned exactly that way. So StarWars.com, Lucasfilm, Disney Today announced the official cast for Star Wars Episode 7, still untitled. And we've got John Boyega, Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac, Andy Serkis, Donald Gleason, Max von Sydow, which we'll talk about more in a minute. Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, Anthony Daniels, Peter Mayhew, and Kenny Baker, all in the new film. There's a nice picture of all of them sitting around during a reading. Good to see them all there. It's nice that they uncrated R2-D2 so he could get a little air in that.
Kenny's actually in there. Yeah, Kenny lives in there.
I don't see him in the picture unless see everyone
else. He's inside
R2.
That's where he lives. He has a little apartment in there.
But there's your cast. Reactions, Rodrigo?
I'm fine with it. I mean, I don't have a problem with the people coming back. It's interesting though, because I know people who are actually kind of upset about the original cast coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in the minority. I think the majority of people when they announced, you know, Luke and Leia and Han are coming back, we're like, oh my gosh. And then they're like, oh, and Chewbacca too. And they're like, oh, okay. but there were people, I know people who were like, who cares? You know, it's like, I would rather just see the continuing adventures of Han, Luke, and Leia as young people with different actors. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's interesting because Star Wars kind of becomes something different to everyone who sees it. And the constant amount of Star Wars stuff that we see don't enforce one particular view either. So to some people, this is actually kind of terrible news. To me, I honestly don't care. I figured if they didn't get all those guys back, we just weren't going to see them. They were just going to be different adventures. I had nothing to do with them. If we got them back, they would probably play some part in it, but we still don't know. They might just be cameo players for all we know.
Right. Look, a whole other woman has been added to the Star Wars universe.
From what I've read, that there is still one open cast slot, and it's a female role.
Oh, okay, good.
That's what I read today.
All right, good. So Daisy Ridley adds to the Star Wars universe.
So now there will be like five after that one role is filled.
There's Mon Mothma.
B. Arthur.
She's no longer canonical. You just said so.
And Daisy Ridley. So there you go. Padme.
What's she been in?
Shmi.
The first three movies. Episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Not Padme, you student. Daisy Ridley.
I don't know. I have no idea who these people are. I haven't looked up her name either, but a lot of people were asking.
I know Andy Serkis as Gollum. And mm-hmm. Apes.
Yes.
Didn't he play Jar Jar? Yeah. No, he didn't play Jar Jar.
No, that was somebody else. Daisy Ridley, not a face that I recognize.
Oh my god, I would love Jar Jar back. 5 seconds. 5 seconds just like Attack of the Clones. He'd be old and grizzled and have really long ear hair.
He'd be all dehydrated out.
I still think we should see Jar Jar in carbonite somewhere.
Oh man, I would laugh in the middle of the theater so hard.
She's mostly been in TV episodes. Mr. Selfridge, Silent Witness, Toast of London. Nothing that I've seen.
They really didn't.
She's a nice looking young lady.
They didn't pull any big stars in.
What do you mean? Harrison Ford's a huge star.
I mean, new
Mark
people.
Mark Hamill is a huge star.
New people.
Andy Serkis is a big star.
Andy Serkis, I would debate the huge star on that one. How many people do you think know who Andy Serkis is?
I bet
is?
If you said Gollum.
Right. Yeah. But do you think people associate Gollum as Andy Serkis?
No, his face is all over the place.
This Daisy Ridley person, though, does sort of resemble a young Carrie Fisher. I wonder if she's going to be like an
That's the rumors that she's supposed to be Han Solo's daughter.
Ooh.
Yeah, interesting.
Now, notice I said Han Solo's daughter, not the daughter of Leia and Leia. So.
Right. Han Solo's daughter, the mother is Chewbacca. And their long partnership suddenly exploded.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's another interesting thing that you will see in the in that photo. Only one person in the minority category.
Yeah, as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. As per that, Star
that's
Wars.
That's pretty much Star Wars canon.
Which is interesting because in the Star Wars class, we do have there were two whole lectures talking about is Star Wars inherently racist,
mm-hmm.
and is Star Wars sexist? And it was very heated debates among the students and the instructor who was teaching that week. People are very passionate about this. So overall, Zach, are you excited about this casting announcement?
Do you care? No.
Okay.
No, this casting announcement does nothing for me besides saying, hey, I bet some leaked pictures of set photos are going to come out in the next 2 months.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Matthew?
I will not go so far as to say I could care less, because obviously I'm probably going to go see this movie. I went and saw episode 3 after hating episode 1 and episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it is a little troubling that seeing, you know, such non-diverse cast, but when you take into account that I think the first person of color that we saw in the original trilogy was Lando, who showed up halfway through the second movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
And to my knowledge, Lando is the only person of color in the second movie, not counting, you know, people who may be under masks or latex or anything like that.
Mm-hmm,
I don't know that it's out of character. It's a little disappointing, but, you know, not knowing what's going on and knowing that this is, you know, the main cast of that first movie, that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't actually, you know, give us something that is a little bit more of something.
Right.
You know, who's to say that Luke Skywalker survives episode 7?
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker could die and we could have a new awesome young Jedi.
Mark Hamill's been working out. He looks great.
Does he really?
He looks great. I mean, he's lost 68? A lot of weight.
65?
Oh, no, I think Harrison Ford is pushing 80, so Mark Hamill's got to be 65-ish.
Yeah, but Mark's like 10 years younger than Harrison. Mark was born in 1951.
62.
So he's 62.
And he looks great.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Here's an interesting thing. Originally, before Star Wars came along, a young man by the name of George Lucas wanted to bring back the magic of the serials of his youth. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to do a Flash Gordon movie. He wanted to update Flash Gordon and make that a really cool movie for all to see. Problem was, and my understanding is, maybe the studio didn't want him to do Flash Gordon, and Dino De Laurentiis had actually gotten the rights to the Flash Gordon movie and didn't want Lucas working on it. And so Lucas had to go on and make Star Wars instead. Interestingly, Max von Sydow played Ming the Merciless in the Flash movie, which was an homage to the old serials, and now Ming the Merciless, Flash Gordon character, is in a Star Wars movie.
For some reason, I was thinking that he played Count Dooku, but that was actually Christopher Lee.
That was Christopher Lee. Yeah.
Max von Sydow also was the villain of Strange Brew featuring Bob and Doug McKenzie. So, you know, that turn right there, I mean, that cemented him as a legend.
There you go. All right, listeners, again, a second really long episode, but I know that there's been so many huge things that were dumped on us.
So many.
And we didn't even get to talk about any of the news that came out of WonderCon, any of the news that came out of C2E2 this past week.
C2E2 was in the box in that shot of the cat.
Yeah, he was that droid that got blown off the side of the princess's ship in episode 1.
R2's cousin.
Yes. So we didn't even get to Red Star this week. We're going to wait for do that next week. And probably
a little time.
Lore, you know, providing that the comic book and pop culture universe doesn't drop a whole other series of bombs on us in the next 6 days.
Who knows?
It could happen. Smell that in the air?
Star Trek 3.
Smell that, Zach?
The smells new lead character.
Smells like Khan.
Khan. There's your Star Trek reference for everybody who said we talked too much about Star Wars.
Madeline Khan!
I think there's something coming, Zach.
What do you think?
I think there's something big just around the corner.
I bet some comic character dies.
Well, Wolverine is going to die.
He comes back next year.
Archie Andrews is going to die.
Big guess there.
Let's take the guy who doesn't die, right? And we'll tell a story where he dies.
Yeah, yeah.
So what makes this different? Well, he's the guy who doesn't die.
But it totally invalidates that whole Wolverine in the future with the apocalypse world.
Yes.
No. Disney came out and said that that's no longer canon.
Curse you, they also moved us and gave us. All right, everybody, that wraps it up for this installment. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing this with your friend. And if you thought this issue was worth 50 cents, consider signing up and becoming a VIP over at members.majorspoilers.com. $2 a month is all it takes. It's not that much, and it helps us do even more shows than the Major Spoilers Podcast. You can find them all over the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. At least 10 shows, I think, is what we got now. 7 or 10 shows. Something in there. But we thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit majorspoilers@majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers Forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers.
Fat Dick's revision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Wait, think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Start raving rich like a man of iron. Might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Major spoiler, whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2014.